want to share with you today a message that really to me seems to be an unlikely word to come from the passage that it comes from. Because I've preached this passage, gosh, many, many times. I've used it as an illustration in other messages because it's really such a good point. This passage is in 2 Kings, and I know, you know, most people nowadays, your Bible's not in a book on your lap. It's either in a little phone deal and you turn to a website, or it's our Sky Bible up here. You know, that's what we call it. Our Sky Bible will have the verse on there. But it's a most unlikely place for the word that I believe the Lord has given me to share with you today. And it's in 2 Kings chapter 6. And before we start reading about four verses here, I want to share just a little context with you, because context really matters. It really makes a difference what actually is being said to whom, at what time, and why it was said. Every verse in the Bible has a verse before it and a verse after it, you know, except the first verse and the last verse. And those verses are there for a purpose. And most of the time, they're setting what you'd call context, because to share perspective, to have a point of view, to understand what something's being said, you have to have some context. Well, there are two men in the Bible, in the book of 2 Kings, the first part of 2 Kings, that are named, and I've said this to our church folks and some that have been in studies before. I've said, when I get to heaven, I'm going to have a little talk with them, because their names are so close together, it's hard to talk about them without getting them mixed up together. And they're both prophets of the Lord. One of them's name is Elijah. Now, Elijah was the prophet that challenged Baal's counterparts on the hill and set the sacrifice and poured the water on it and said the God that answers by fire will be the great God. And the false prophets took the first service and they put their sacrifice down and they prayed to their God. Nothing happened. And Elijah was mocking them and criticizing them. Hey, maybe you need to talk louder. Maybe he's in the bathroom or something. Seriously, that's what the man, the prophet said. Maybe he's in the bathroom. You know, you need to talk. Give your God a chance. Come on, you know. And of course, their old pagan gods didn't answer by fire. And Elijah said, take some water, pour a barrel on it, pour another barrel, another barrel, another barrel, another barrel, until the whole trench was filled up and the sacrifice was actually floating in water. And then he cried out to God in heaven, and God sent fire and just consumed the whole sacrifice that was right there and consumed all 450 prophets of Baal. And so Jezebel said, I'm going to kill you. And he got out of town, went to a little brook called the Brook of Cherith, and the birds came and fed him. You remember all that? That's Elijah. Elijah, great man of God, used by God in so many wonderful ways, tremendously anointed by God, just carried the Spirit of God everywhere because God was on Elijah. Well, he had a young man following behind him for a while, a long time actually. His name was Elisha. See how close? Elijah and Elisha. Yeah. Elisha was a young man that believed that God had called him to be a prophet. And so he attached himself to the man of God and followed the man of God everywhere he went so he could see what he did and learn what to do and hopefully learn some things that God would say to him and become like Elijah was. And so he kept following him, and one day Elijah looked at Elisha, and Elijah said to him, God has informed me that it's time for me to leave this earth. And so what I want you to do is I want you to go back and be with your people. I mean, it's time to stop following me because God's about to take me to heaven right now. I mean, maybe today, right now. So you go back to your people and go back and get. And Elisha said to him, wherever you go, I'm going. I'm not leaving you. God's called me to it. I'm with you. And then Elijah said, well, you know, it's going to be tough and I'm going to leave and then you won't have anybody to follow and blah, blah. So Elijah tried three different times to get Elisha to leave him and go back home and go back to his people and do something. And all three times Elijah said the same thing. He said, wherever you're going, I'm going. I'm not leaving you. I've got your back. I'm with you. And so when he got to the place, to the Jordan River, Elijah took a cloak that he had and he folded it up and they called that his mantle, I mean, that was just a kind of like a word that they named it, his mantle. And they folded it up, and Elijah, he needed to go across the Jordan River. And so Elijah struck the river with his mantle, and the river parted, and they walked over on dry ground. And when they got to the other side of the river, Elijah said, "All right, I believe God's coming to get me now. And is there anything?" He looked at Elisha and he said, "Is there anything I can do for you?" And Elijah said, "Yes, my Lord, I would like to have a double portion of your spirit. I want God to give me a double portion of what he's doing in your life." And Elijah looked at him and said, "If you are here when I'm taken up, if you actually see me be taken off of this earth, then you'll get your double portion of that power. And if not, you won't." And the thing, one of the good points, and this is not a point in this particular message, but one of the good things to see here is how important it is to be consistent in following the Lord. I mean, there are a lot of things that can happen great and positive in your life as long as you're there. If Elijah had turned away and gone back like he had been encouraged to do, and some of the other sons of the prophets encouraged him to do, then he wouldn't have been there to receive anything from the Lord. I mean, in order to receive, Elijah had to be there. And in order to be there, he had to keep on following even when he was encouraged not to follow, and even when he probably didn't feel like following, and probably when it was hard to follow. But he stayed right there on task. And God honored it with a tremendous blessing, because all of a sudden the wind began to blow out of heaven and fire began to blow out of heaven. And this giant chariot looking thing came out of heaven and swooped down and just picked Elijah up and carried him straight on up into heaven. Elijah became one of two people in the Bible to leave this earth without dying. Elijah left without dying. A chariot whirlwind carried him up into heaven. And Enoch, the Bible says Enoch walked with God and was not. Yeah. In other words, Enoch just walking down the road one day and he was gone. And somebody said, "Didn't I see Enoch walking? What happened to him?" Yeah. Good night. Boy, he's just gone. Enoch walked with God and was not. By the way, those are the two that are projected to come back at the end of time as the two witnesses in the book of Revelation. Just for some of you like that kind of stuff. But anyway, Elijah gets taken away, and when he gets taken away, his cloak falls off of him and just falls down to the ground, that mantle. And Elisha picks it up, and he wraps it up like Elijah did, and he goes to the Jordan River. And now the big question is, there were 50 sons of the prophet, in other words, 50 preacher boys that were watching. And the 50 preacher boys didn't go across the Jordan with Elijah and Elisha, but they were on the other side. They were watching. And as they watched, their big question was, will the same power of God that allowed Elijah to strike the water and it part and they walked through, would that power be on Elisha? And Elisha took that mantle, and Elijah hit the Jordan River with that mantle, and the water parted. And he walked back across, and people began to sing. They began to bow down to the God of Elisha. You know, Elisha, God's power is on Elisha. God's spirit's on Elisha. God hadn't left this earth with Elijah. God still has his man in Elisha. And Elisha did great things. Boy, a lot of stuff you've heard about the widow and the oil, and go get the bowls, and they filled them all up and all that. And the thing never ran dry, and he laid on a boy, and he blew breath into his life, and he got up and lived again. I mean, Elisha just did tremendously great things and powerful things. So the Spirit of God was truly there. This is what this passage comes from. Yeah. This is like that. All that happened in chapter 2, 3, 4, 5, and now chapter 6. And what was going on in chapter 6 is there was a king of the Syrians, and the Syrians were attacking Israel, and they were trying to kill Israel and kill the king. And the king was trying to save Israel as a nation and save his life, and he needed to know the strategies and so forth of what was going on with the enemies all around him. And so Elisha would come to the king of Israel and tell the king of Israel, "Here, go over here, or don't go over there. When you go over there, watch out, because he's hiding behind a rock. When you go over there..." I mean, he told him everything. As a matter of fact, one of the counselors for the king of Syria said, how does he know all of this about us? It's like, I mean, he said this. He said, he knows what we say in our bedroom. Man, the guy knows everything. We got to get rid of him because he's telling on us. And he was. And so the king of Syria looked for an opportunity to get rid of Elisha, the man of God. And they heard that Elisha was in the city of Dothan. And here's what happened. So he sent there horses and chariots and a great army. And they came by night and surrounded the city. When the servant of the man of God rose early in the morning and went out, behold, an army with horses and chariots was all around the city. And the servant said, alas, my master, what shall we do? He said, do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Then Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, please open his eyes that he may see. So the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. A most likely event, the army of Syria dispatches by night, and Elisha wakes up in the morning and the army is all around him. Elisha's just so cool, isn't he? I mean, think about it. He goes to bed at night and everything's fine. And he wakes up in the morning and all around him, is darkness and evil and injustice and the enemy and all of these, you know, restrictions and injustices of life. And what was his response to that? I mean, his response wasn't, wow, what in the world am I going to do? How am I going to get out of here? Oh, man, good night. Why didn't somebody tell me? God, why didn't you do? What was Elisha's response when all of that was happening and boom, man, all around him was the enemy? He just said, don't be afraid. That's all the man said. Don't be afraid. Elijah was a threat to the Syrians. He was a threat to the enemy. And when you're a threat to the enemy, you can expect your enemy to attack. Yeah. Has a little something for you. Yeah. Has a little program for you, a little plan for your life. Has something going on that's intended to change your life. And so how do we handle this? How do we, like Elisha, how do we handle things when the enemy throws them at us, and when it seems like everything that we've ever trusted in has just gone way out of control, and things that we used to count on, we can't count on them anymore. You didn't even know that kind of stuff could happen. It was like, what in the world? We don't even know what's going on. And it seems like every day, as a matter of fact, you don't even have to wait every day. Every moment almost in the last while, we've had news, bad news. I mean, just ringing in your pocket. You don't even have to watch it on TV. You know, there was a time when TV used to go off. Do you guys, are you familiar with it? Yeah, there was a time when TV used to go off. Yeah, right. Jimmy, 12 midnight. See, you old lion, so you remember. Yeah, we had TV, and our TV went off. At midnight, they would play the national anthem, and then a pattern would come on the screen. Yeah, and it would go like that until about like maybe 5 or 6 in the morning. I saw it go off at night, but I rarely saw it come on in the morning. But it was like it was either 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. It would come on, and radio did the same thing. Radio station go off at midnight. And then come back on at, you know, 5 in the morning, 6, 7 in the morning. Yeah. And so there was a time where we at least had some rest from all this bad news that are going on. But nowadays, man, we don't have any rest because the news never sleeps, does it? I mean, it just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's about 15 channels on TV that can fill up 24 hours a day with nothing but news. They got to talk about something, and they're going to pick this and pick that and pick that and stir that up and create that and stir that. I mean, it's nothing but bad news all the time, and it buzzes in my pocket, you know, and you say, what in the world is a buzz? Well, let me give you some bad news. I'm buzzing, and I look, and it's just bad news everywhere. In other words, the enemy's trying to overwhelm us. The enemy's trying to confuse us and overwhelm us and get us to make some choices and decisions and have this sense of being out of control and that what's happening and what's going on and, oh my God, what shall we do? What shall we do? Well, this passage is a passage about perspective. And every perspective has a context. And let me just show you what I mean. I constantly hear, and you probably do too, people say, it's never been this bad before. Right? Yeah. People on your Facebook page, people are tweeting it or whatever they do it to it, and Snapchats and whatever. I know a few words, but that's about it. But anyway... And or any social media platform or any news platform, and you'll hear somebody say, man, it's never been this bad before. This is a horrible thing. I don't know what in the world we're going to do. This is just terrible. Our nation is going to be all messed up and destroyed, and these people, and why did they elect him, and why did he do it? I mean, good night. I'm thinking to myself, are you crazy? Are you whacked? It's never been this bad before. Hey, let's have a little context, all right? Okay. About 200 years ago, there were people walking around in this country that were slaves. About 200 years ago, there were people that belonged to other people, and other people controlled their life, and some were good and some were bad, and they were mistreated, but they couldn't go. They were in bondage, don't you think? That was pretty bad. Yeah. Oh, but it's never been as bad as it is now. Well, that was pretty bad. Yeah, and World War II. World War II, there was this guy named Hitler, and he captured 8 million Jewish people. 8 million of them. Put them in concentration camps. You can look, man, they have national museums full of pictures from there. They look like little skin and bones. This stand's about as big as some of them are. Just look like a little bone. And then and just skin and bones mistreated. And then put them in ovens and gassed them to death. 8 million of them. I'd say that was pretty bad, right? Oh, but it's never been this bad before. Well, that's pretty bad. Well, and then the 60s. I lived in the 60s. I was a teenager in the 60s. So I know what the 60s were all about. Yeah, the 60s were something, guys. I'm going to tell you, you teenagers, you don't know how the 60s were. Man, the 60s were wild and woolly. They really were. They were amazing. But something else was going on in the 60s that you probably aren't aware of. In the 60s, black and white people couldn't drink out the same water fountains. Black and white people couldn't go to the same bathroom. Black and white people couldn't be in the same place at the same time. Couldn't ride at the same place. One rode in the back of the bus, one rode in front of the bus. Had to give all of that. Absolutely. Had to get out. Jimmy said, had to get out of his seat so a white person could come up and sit down. That's right. And Martin Luther King Jr. led a march in Selma, Alabama. And in Selma, the march over the bridge... A peaceful protest, thousands of people peacefully marching across a bridge saying, we want equal rights, we want to be men, we want to be treated the same. And guard dogs and attack dogs and fire hoses were turned on those people, and you blew them off their feet and blew them all down the road, and dogs biting and chewing on them and people hitting them with billy clubs and all of that. Peaceful protesters. I would say that's pretty bad. But it's never been this bad before, right? Never been this bad. But that's pretty bad. Yeah. And then in the 1970s, we had a group of people that came home from a war that they had been fighting over in a little country called Vietnam. You remember them? Yeah, they came back home after giving their limbs and their lives and everything they had to give so that this country could be free, and they fought for this country and gave for this country, and they flew them back into airports, and when they flew them back into airports, there were people standing out in the airport spitting on them and cussing them and calling them baby killers. Oh, but it's never been this bad before. Well, that was pretty bad. 1980s, man, the 1980s, we had 21% interest. You couldn't buy a house. You couldn't buy anything. People were losing their homes, losing their valuables. And there were 44 American citizens held for 444 days in a little country called Iran. And were only loosed after 444 days. Now, I'm just saying, context. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying when we say it's never been this bad before, we need to have a context. Yeah, compared to what? Yeah, that's right, Lord. Compared to what? And here's Elijah. Here's Elisha, and he's in the city of Dothan, and here's the little young man that comes up to him, and the little young man says, Elisha, we're surrounded. What shall we do? And you would expect Elisha to have some tremendous narrative to share with the young man. Some great words of wisdom, some particular instruction that would make everything okay. And he would talk them all the way through everything that was going on. But Elijah just looked at him and said, don't be afraid. Let me talk to you about a couple of perspectives from here. I better put the top on that. I had to do that for our sponsors. I better put the top on that. I'll kick it somewhere in just a minute. Don't worry about it. All right, here's a perspective. Trouble can seem overwhelming. When you have trouble in your life, that trouble can seem all-encompassing. That trouble can seem like it is the worst thing that has ever happened in the history of the world. You can get overwhelmed by things that happen in your life. Now, if you want to substitute the word test for trouble, you can if you want to. It means the same thing. Test in your life can overwhelm you, which we all go through. Look at your neighbor and say, you're in a test right now. You're in a test right now. Yeah. Yeah, you are. And you can see, and you can get overwhelmed because you remember, let me pop the verses back up here, these verses. You remember when the enemy sent horses and chariots and what kind of an army? A little puny, measly, little frazzle of an army? No, he sent a great army. That means a big army. That means a powerful army. That means the enemy didn't send a few little scraggly soldiers. The enemy didn't send some little small troop of people. Man, he sent a great army to surround that city. You know why? Because the enemy wanted to intimidate them. The enemy wanted them to be fearful and afraid. And so the enemy pulls out all the stops and sends a powerful force intended to overwhelm whoever might see this. And notice that he did it at night. Yeah. Which is the way the enemy often operates, at night. Yes, he does. When no one can see. When no one's prepared. When we're at ease at Zion. When we're resting. You know, night in the Bible represents darkness. When you see night used in the Bible, it could be representing something besides just the physical night. It represents darkness. It represents blindness. It represents sin, the darkness of sin. You can't see the sin in your life. You're blinded to it. It also means ignorance. It means I'm not seeing what's there. I'm ignorant of what's there because I can't see it. I can see the darkness, but I can't see it. So I'm ignorant of what this is really all about. And this is the way the enemy does in our homes. This is the way the enemy does in our communities. This is what the enemy does in our cities. This is what the enemy is trying to do in our country right now. The enemy is trying to overwhelm us. The enemy shows us what? Anger, hostility, turmoil, strife, riots, rage, just all of these overwhelming, tremendously negative emotional things. Every time we turn on the TV, there it is, and there it is, and then there's some more, and then here's some more, and here's some buzzing in your back pocket, you know, for you to see whenever you got a little peace in your heart. Here, let me stir you up again. And the enemy intends to stir us up and keep us overwhelmed and keep us anxious and keep us ignorant. Because the servant wakes up and he's all shocked and he's overwhelmed. And like that servant, we all face things that are overwhelming and we're perplexed. And we wake up to injustice and inequality, which is, as I pointed out, has always been here. I mean, there's never been a time where this earth has ever been fair. There's always been injustice. There's always been pain and suffering and fighting and warfare and strife and division and all that kind of stuff. So we're not fighting things that have never been here before, but we are seeing things in a different context. And the reason we're seeing things in a different context, everybody say with me, Facebook. What has changed? The battles? No. The prejudice? No. The injustice? No. The inequality? No. What's changed? The platforms by which we can receive all of the information that we get in our life. And I'm just saying to you that when you consider the enemy's overwhelming desire to confuse you and to frustrate you and to cause you to be fearful and afraid and frozen in your life so that you not only don't see things, you don't even talk about them. Fear freezes you, where not only can you not fix it, you can't even talk about it. And that's the intention of the enemy. The enemy uses these mechanisms that we have. And I'm not saying that Facebook's evil. I'm just saying that it's being used that way. I'm saying that the platform by which you guys share your baby pictures and what's going on in your family and you talk to your relatives and they get to see everything that's good and happy about your life, the enemy's also using that to keep us stirred up about things. Because I'm not so sure that it's good for you to be able to go onto a platform that goes all over this country 5 minutes after you see something that really bothers you. I mean, that might not be a good time to strike to your Facebook and get out there and start talking to people about what you think about all those things. Before you even pray about it. Before you even know what's going on. I mean, we have people that are talking about things and they don't even know what's happening because nobody knows what's happening. There are investigations going on that have not been completed. There are incidents that have happened that nobody knows. There's no facts out there. There's nothing to, and people just start projecting and start guessing and start thinking and start saying, here's what I heard and there's what I went, blah, blah, blah. And the enemy is just scattering that, just vast emotion into our lives. I'm just saying to you,
you're right.
Pray before you post.
That's right.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Pray before you post. Yeah. Because the enemy wants to use our frustration and our aggravation and our annoyance to keep us blinded and in ignorance to what's really happening in life. Because let me give you a second observation. Trouble gives us a chance to prove what we truly believe. You know, we like to talk a lot, right? We like to talk a lot about what we believe and what we think and what ought to be done and what, you know, needs to be done. And we do a lot of talking. When trouble hits our life, and when panic time hits our life and when we get overwhelmed all of a sudden, we get an opportunity to see if we really believe what we've been talking. We get a chance, you know, and I know this is an old phrase, we get a chance to walk the walk, not just talk the talk, you know. Yeah. Oh, I heard what you said, but how are you, you know? Yeah. I mean, how do you respond to this crisis? So in the crisis, Elisha here not only doesn't panic, but he has the wherewithal to point out a greater thing that's happening in life. He says, look, what I want you to know is there are more with us than there are with them. I mean, not only did he not panic, he just said, hey, let me point something out that you might not know, and this is a great thing. And I'm just saying that, look, the servant's like us. We're the servant. The servant says, what are we going to do, man? How are we going to handle this? Who are we going to vote for? How do we fix this problem? Where can we get to hide? Who's going to come in and save the day? I mean, that's us. And we say, we believe in a great God. We say our God is in control of things. We say our God has control of this land. We say this is his story. This is not our story. This is his story. And yet when trouble comes in and when disaster overwhelms and when things are stirred up, our first thing is to look for somebody else like us that can fix this thing. And then blame those who don't fix things immediately as if, but man, I know we shouldn't have voted for you. I know we shouldn't. I know we should have had somebody else over here. I know you're not. I mean, and it's humanity. And I'm just saying to you, when we fall into these kinds of situations in life, we get a chance to prove what we really, truly believe. Don't be afraid, Elisha says. Really? Really? Don't be afraid. That's one of the most often used verses or statements in the Bible. Many times in the Bible, God says, don't be afraid. Fear not. Over and over. As a matter of fact, if you'll study it, every time God encounters someone, the first thing he has to say to them is, fear not. Get up, brother. Brother passed out. Fear. Get up, brother. Fear not. Don't be afraid. You know, it seems like that God might know something about fear that we don't know. He says, don't do it. Fear not. What is it about fear that God knows that we don't know? Well, could it be that fear freezes us? When we're afraid, we don't know what to do. We don't know what to say. So what do? We do nothing. In the face of an opposition, in the face of an enemy, when fear fills our life, we freeze and we do nothing in our life. So God says, look, when these things happen, don't be afraid. Elijah says, don't be afraid. This is not a time to be afraid. This is a time to trust what you say that you believe in life. Let me show you this third observation here. To defeat trouble, you must see it as it really is. Now, this is really important. And I'm going to just say this in just a few words. In order to defeat trouble, you have to see trouble the way it really is. When the servant comes to Elijah and says, Elijah, what shall we do? What most of us would be expecting, and probably what the servant would be expecting, was for Elijah to give him some practical answer about what they're going to do, right? Okay, come here. Let me show you. All right, you see right over there? You see that little tiny crack right there in that boulder? I've been watching it for a long time. And at exactly 3:36 in the afternoon, there's a perfect shadow over that little crack in that boulder right there. And as soon as 3:36 hits, I'm going to give you a signal. We're going to run over there. We're going to run through that little crack, and the enemy will never see us. That's what he was expecting. What shall we do? Practical. Give me an answer. But in the face of a time when it seems that a practical answer would be necessary, Elisha gets all philosophical. He does what we parents often do, right? We parents, when we're faced with a question that we really don't want to answer, what do? We don't answer the question, right? The question is, what shall we do? That's the question. The answer is, do not be afraid. So what is Elisha saying? Elisha is saying, look, before we do anything, I got to tell you what we ought not do. Before I can tell you what we can do and should do and are going to do, I'm going to first need to tell you what not to do. Do not be afraid. That's what I'm saying to you. What can we do? Do not be afraid. You know, there are a lot of things that when you get in certain situations that you really, it's really important what you don't do sometimes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be almost as important what you don't do in some of these situations as what you really do. I started to say do and then do, you know, but I didn't want to say it like that. It was coming out that way. Yeah. And so Elijah says, look, before you can follow my instructions, you've got to share my perspective. Before we can fix the situation, you've got to see the situation. When we see things, we look at things and we see the things that are right there on the surface, right? Like I encounter you at a certain time of your life and you're all mad and angry and bent out of shape. And I'm looking at you all angry and mad and bent out of shape. And what is my evaluation of you? My evaluation of you is you are angry and mad and bent out of shape. Because that's what I see on the surface. And if you only deal with what you see on the surface, you're not going to be able to cure the situation at its source. In other words, there's a reason why you're angry, frustrated, and mad. And if I'm going to see what I really need to see, I'm going to see past your anger to see what causes that anger. I'm just saying that sometimes injustice, inequality, frustration, mistreatment, there are lots of things that can cause people to act the way they act. But if we only see what's happening on the surface and we don't try to get any other perspective about it, we're going to miss it every time. I'm just putting in a case for not doing something. I'm putting in a case for stopping and thinking before we start evaluating something that we don't really know anything about because we only see on the surface. Look, I don't know what it feels like to be a black person in America. I don't know what it's like to be a woman who gets turned down for a job because they don't want to promote women. I don't know what it's like to be a Hispanic person or a Latino person who's fearful of every time they see a police vehicle drive by, they think it's the border enforcement agency and they're going to take them away and run. I mean, I don't know how that feels. Because I'm not that. And so in order for me to have a perspective about how people in those situations feel about things so that I can understand and I can minister and I can do something about that kind of stuff, I've got to first sit back, shut my mouth, and look and watch things and talk to people about things without feeling led to correct their life somehow and just listen to what they say. So if we only see things on the surface, we'll try to fix things on the surface. But it's not a surface thing. It's a systemic thing. It's a deep thing. It's a lasting thing. It's something that's been there a long time. Many people may have tried to fix it on the surface, but it's been there a long time, and it'll stay there until somebody pays attention and sees it from the perspective of God. And I'm just saying that there was Elijah, encouraged to see things on the surface, just like the little servant. Servant goes out, sees all that army around him, says, man, we're about to be killed, wiped off the face of God's earth. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And Elijah walks out there and sees the same thing. The army's still there. The enemy's still there. They didn't disappear. Sees the same thing the servant said and says the first thing you need to do, look, we don't need to do anything. First thing we need to do is pray. You mean all of this surround us and you're going to pray? Yeah, we're going to pray. And here's what we're going to pray. We're going to pray that God would open up your eyes. Because my eyes see beyond the situation. My eyes see from the perspective of God. When I look at that, I see all of God's heroes surrounding those wicked demons up there. And I see how that there are way more with us than there are with them. God opened up his eyes that he might see. You think it's time to do something. It's time to pray. What are we going to do? We're going to pray. Let me give you this fourth one. To see it, to deal with trouble, you got to see it as it really is. And here's the last one. Living above trouble requires rethinking us and them. Us and them. Our world is trying to separate us today into us and them. You know, that's one of the great things I love about this church right here. Seriously. This church is not a us and them church. We are all of us. I love this church. This church stands as a testimony to the fact that God can create a body that is that everybody's in us. But our old media and our old world and our old crazy, it seeks to create barriers between people. And to make people upset with them, it's them that are there. And so in order to deal with real trouble, you've got to rethink this us and then kind of thing. Because I know that Jesus is coming back one day, but it's not right now. It might be tonight. It might be that. I don't know, but all I'm saying is, until he does, and when Jesus comes back, he's going to straighten all this stuff out. But until he does come back, guess who it's up to? It's up to us. Yeah. God wants us to say, all right, what can we do? Well, the first thing is don't be afraid, because those who are with us are more than those that are with them. That's what he's saying to us. And us and them, we don't have to fear them. We can have a perspective that they can become us. Yeah, yeah. Do you know that everything in life the enemy tries to divide us on, really? I mean, everything in life, even church. Man, I guarantee you there are probably 50 churches from that traffic light to that traffic light. It's unbelievable how many churches there are in this city. I used to say one on every corner, but now there's probably two or three on every corner. I mean, it's ridiculous. And do you know that we all basically believe the same thing? About 99% of everything that we need to believe, we all believe the same thing. We all believe that Jesus Christ is the only begotten Son of God, and the only way to heaven is to receive Jesus as your Savior and Lord, and that he'll wash your sin and cleanse your life and make you holy and take you to heaven, that the Holy Spirit will fill your life and create in you the existence of God in you, and God will walk with you and God will lead you and God, and you can pray. And we're just all groovy on every bit of that up until it comes this one little thing about how you baptize somebody. Some of them say you sprinkle them. Some say you duck them in water. Some say you take your hand, put it in water, put it on the head. We lose fellowship because of a triviality like that. Or somebody says you need to speak in tongues, or you don't need to speak in tongues, or you need to turn backflips across the stage, or you need to jump up and yell, or you need to sit down and be quiet, you need to be reverent, or you need to be loud. I mean, we divide over these trivialities of life. And all the enemy is saying, look at them. Look at them. Look at them. Look at them. That's just like them, isn't it? Yeah. Now, bear with me. Nowadays, when we watch TV, they show on TV some big ruckus going on somewhere, some big violent something going on somewhere, and all us white people sitting in our living rooms watching TV, eating supper, seeing all that on TV, all that violence, all that stuff. They don't get back here and show you the 100 people back here that are peaceful. They're carrying a sign saying, I think they're wrong, you know, whatever it might be. They're protesting. What they do is they find as many people as they can that are acting violently. And they put the camera on them. And many times it's black people. Not all the time. Many times it is. Or it's Mexican people waving a flag, a Mexican flag, or a Hispanic, or one of the Latino, one of the nations. And they'll put that on TV and they'll show that. And all us white people sitting in our living room eating supper, watching TV, are looking at that. And you know what we're thinking? Look at them. That's just like them. And it reinforces our attitude about who is them. And it creates a barrier. And then you can have black people and Hispanic people. And you have hundreds of friends that are white. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of your best friends are white.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You don't even have any trouble being with them or with a whole bunch of white people. They love you. They think you're brilliant. You're great. They accept. I mean, you are one. Y'all are all one. And then one ignorant white person can stand up and say something stupid or write it on Facebook or whatever. And the enemy drags you right to it and says, look at them. That's how they think about you. To create us in them. And you know why the enemy wants to do this? Because he is so afraid that we are going to wake up one day and find out that if we don't get together and quit letting the enemy divide us into us and them and realize that together we can defeat that enemy, we're going to get whipped in the battle if we don't soon discover that. God put us together. There is no us and there is no them. We are it. And when we realize that, and when God leads us together, there's nothing we can't do. Listen, guys, I'm going to tell y'all something. There are no limits on us when we are together. And so Elisha here, I think Elijah's the perfect example of the church and how the church ought to respond in times of trouble. Elisha doesn't panic and he says, do not be afraid because there are more with us. There's more light in this world than there is darkness. And when the light shines, it eliminates the darkness. And God will eliminate the darkness. You know, I told you the little account where Elijah went to heaven and his mantle dropped, and then Elisha picked it up and he touched the Jordan, and everybody was waiting for something. You remember what they were waiting for? They were waiting for to see if the same power of God was on Elisha that was on Elijah when he left this earth. You know what I think? I think this world is waiting for the same thing. I think this old crazy world is looking at the church in times of trouble and is saying to the church, does God have enough power to straighten this thing out? Does God have enough strength? Does God care? And we represent God. I'm just saying to you, it's time for us to drop us and them, to not allow ourselves to be dragged into things like that, to quit being so, what we call it, spontaneous, I would say, you know, in what way we react to things and the way we talk about things and the way we say things and stuff like that, and get a little perspective, you know, pray before you post, or get a little perspective before you start talking about things. You know, I have never considered that this pulpit right here as a place for me to practice giving my opinion about things. I try to be very careful about what I say up here. And so our lives are that way. I mean, be careful about your opinions. I mean, it's fine to have opinions and it's okay to voice opinions and everybody has them, you know. But before you start voicing things that the enemy can use and start allowing to cause division, think about those things. Pray about those things. Be wary of those things because God's with us. And when God's with us, we can accomplish all things. All right, stand your feet, would you please? Hope that made sense to you. Did that make sense to you at all? Did I just rambling around up here? Okay, well, I want it to make sense at least. Hopefully it'll be valuable to you in some way. Yep, God wants us. All right, just bow your head with me. Maybe you're here right now and you say, Pastor, you know what I need? I need the Lord in my life. Because I know God has something for me. And I'm going to say, you know, I believe you. I believe God does have something for you. I believe God wants your life to matter. He created you for a purpose. He drew you to himself. He's put you in the midst of a people who love each other and love him. You have opportunities to thrive here. And if you'll just say yes to him, I believe that he'll begin to do great things in your life. That's what he promises. So if you need to say yes to the Lord right now in your own heart, you pray something like this.